the mass, I watch the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yawning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I love my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo. Oh, letting go, oh God, letting go, oh God.
And welcome to Freethought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, or Larry Rhodes. This is WOZO 103.9 LPFM live in Knoxville, Tennessee. And this is a live atheist call-in radio show. And we'll be talking about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and sciences. Conversely, we'll also be talking about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And despite what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs, and you'll be hearing them right here on this station. I'll also be talking about atheist and rationalist groups that are right here in Knoxville, and how you can connect with them. Also, did you know that there's an atheist call-in television show that's broadcasting right here from Knoxville? And has been over 6 years now. And we'll be telling you how you can listen into that, too. Tonight we have a special treat. We have a guy who's been very active in the atheist movement for quite a while. He was probably the very first atheist voice that I heard on podcasts. He's been doing, well, let me just read the little blurb here that he's got on his webpage, theinfidelguy.com. From 1999 to 2012, the Infidel Guy, a.k.a. Reginald Findlay, rocked your rational mind featuring programs covering theology, philosophy, and science, and he is currently a science popularizer, biology educator, and genetic genealogist. Over 500 programs were conducted before the program's end. If you can imagine that, 500 programs. Reginald Findlay now spends his time advocating for the improvement of the public's general public's critical thinking skills, as well as fostering the public's understanding and acceptance of science. Welcome to the show, Reginald.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on tonight.
You have been doing so many shows and so many interviews that it's impossible to try to keep track of this. You've done almost as many shows, if not more, than the atheist out of Austin, Texas. Have they been covering about the same time period that you have been?
Yeah, I believe so. And, yeah, I mean, it's just amazing. And if you count all of the spinoff shows and things of that nature and other programs that helped develop or foster, then you're talking probably way over 700 to 800 programs. And, yeah, it was great. But, you know, eventually it was time to move on and go do some other things. But we'll be back in the future, in the near future, I hope.
Okay, very good. Also, we just had Rev walk in. Hi, Rev. Can you get a microphone somewhere? I had all the microphones tied up with our guest and the phone lines, hoping that people would call in. Oh, by the way, we do have a call-in show here, so call at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And you turn your mic on. Okay. Welcome, Rev.
Hello.
Hello. Okay, Reginald, or Infidel Guy, what have you been doing since we last corresponded? I haven't written to you probably in 10 years, I guess. We corresponded a little bit back then, but not recently.
Well, it's interesting. My mother passed away, and right around the same time that I decided to just kind of leave the program behind, I was kind of going through a lot of things. I kind of woke up one day and I realized that there were a lot of factors going on. YouTube, my mother passed away. YouTube was on the rise, and technology was moving in a new era. Now vodcasts were becoming more and more popular rather than audio casting. And the time was just right for me to focus on something that I should have done in the beginning, and that was to focus on my education.
Sure.
And so I decided to go ahead and take some time. I'm still doing featured cameos or random appearances, but I focus on earning my degrees. I went to school and earned an associate's and a bachelor's. two master's degrees and currently working on a PhD in health sciences. It's funny, one of my master's degrees is actually in biology, and I got tired of debating people in chat rooms and on YouTube, and they'll say, "What, do you have a degree in biology?" or something. Yeah. Now I can say, "Actually, I do."
That's so true.
It just helped a little bit.
Yeah. The thing about it is, what's funny is they always ask you, "Do you have a degree in biology?" You say, "No," but they don't have one either, but they feel like they can dump on evolution without a degree, but you can't defend
it. That is true.
Without a degree.
Anyway. Yeah, and this is becoming a big problem, by the way, if I may digress somewhat.
Certainly.
This is becoming a big problem where everyone's an authority or an expert in a particular field, based solely on how they feel about it. They don't have to know much about it, and you don't have to have a degree to be an expert in any particular field, but it sure really does help if you know how to at least interpret science properly. And the problem is you have too many individuals out there who can't even read a scientific paper. They don't know how to read their opponent's material, and they just pick out the parts that sound good to them and that bolster their case, and they present that. And we see this happening with, as you know, I mean, everything from evolution to climate change to Donald Trump. We're seeing the same kind of thing happening.
And in most cases, they don't even bother to read it enough to pick out parts. They just repeat the parts that their preacher tells them is wrong or bad.
It's willingly compartmentalizing facets of reality which conform to their worldview and not an ounce off of that. It's problematic.
Yeah. And I would be going back to school myself. I really wish I'd gotten my PhD. I haven't got my master's, but that's one of the regrets of my life. I wish I'd have gone on to school and in school, but I'm 66 now. It'd be hard to kind of start back, but I'm certainly glad you've pursued yours. One of the things that I remember most from from all of your podcasts that I used to listen to religiously, if you excuse the expression, back in the day, you were a pioneer in it. You were doing it when nobody else was doing it, but you were also introducing me to many of the names that are so recognizable now in the field, like P.Z. Myers and Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor and Massimo Pigliucci, Rob Sherman, Robert Price, George Mackey, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, if anybody wanted to go to infidelguy.com and just look at the names of the podcasts that you put up there, it really is a who's who of the atheist movement.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, a lot of the big hitters that are currently out there right now were, you know, on my program early on. And it was so strange that, I mean, they weren't that big then. So I go back and I'm looking through my list because I moved my server and I changed my website to make it more simple. And I started going through and adding descriptions to all the programs. I was listening to a lot of them again. I was blown away by the variety and the diversity of people I had. Even people that you wouldn't want people to maybe listen to, but I mean, Kent Hovind and David Duke. And,
yeah.
I mean, you name it. I've had these people on the program, and they all influenced me in some way, and I'm grateful for all of them, and also influenced my listeners as well in some way intellectually, or challenged them intellectually, and so I really appreciate all of them, and I try my best to show that level of respect to every single guest I've had. Sometimes I'd laugh and tease, but very rarely, but I knew that I was going to learn something from them, no matter who they were.
Yeah, sometimes it was pretty painful to listen to the podcast just because those people that you had on there throwing so much bull out there, it was hard to take sometimes. How can listeners find your podcast at this point?
Yeah, they still can go to infidelguy.com and they can move over to, actually I have them all listed at the top, and that's quite easy to navigate. I have my programs listed in the hundreds, so they can go from 1 through 100 all the way to 524, and they can just take their time. There's even a search function where they can search for particular philosophers or scientists and whatnot and see if they come up. I'm still adding more descriptions but it's all there, and they're all in the past. And I look back at this, and I cannot believe that I was like 25 when I first started this thing. I did not know anything. I mean, I look back at it now, and the program would be so different in multitude. This way, that's my plan on coming up with different editions.
So. Let's go there. How did you get started in this?
You know, it was interesting. Around 1998, I was exposed to Jake's program, the Atheism Freedom Liberation Show, and I think he goes now about, I think it's Atheism After Dark. I don't know if he still has this Raven website up, but we started the Atheist Network together later on, as well as Atheist Radio and Freethought Media and Freethought, a lot of Freethought programs and Atheist programs. But going back, he had a program and I was interested in the program, but he wasn't really turning them out quickly enough for me. So I later approached him and said, hey, how do you do what you're doing? And he took the time to actually show me what programs he was using and how he was putting it together. And I kind of took it from there and took it to a, you know, different level. But again, back then it wasn't even called podcasting.
No.
I mean, it was called streaming media.
Yeah.
Remember that term?
And we were using real server, I believe, at the time. We were using real technologies. Mm-hmm. We experimented with Windows Media Technology.
Yeah. So you pioneered the streaming media as far as podcasts, that type of thing. Did you set it up using your own client, your own server, and you didn't have to go through a third party or anything?
Indeed. We had our own server set up. It wasn't until the programs got larger that we had to go ahead and start using more robust servers that was out of the home. But, I mean, we were doing everything. Even with our radio station we had set up, we set up an HTML tag to refresh to the next show and have the output streaming over the internet. So we had to really, really rig it to make it work. But it was great. It was quite successful. But eventually, again, as time moved on, more and more people, and this was a good thing, Freethought was beginning to rise. The numbers of free thinkers were at phenomenal numbers, and more and more African American or Black free thinkers were coming out. Free thinkers all over the world, and as you mentioned before, a lot of radio shows spun off of those, including Doc Price's program, The Bible Geek.
Uh-huh.
His program started at the Infidel Guy show.
Mm-hmm. I remember.
And there was Evolution 101 podcast that was started and. He eventually had his own YouTube channel at one point, and so there were a number of different podcasts out there that all started the Infidel Guy.
It's funny that I still got probably 150 or 200 of the programs that I downloaded back then, and every time I change a computer or change a personal device, I always make sure that they're on there. I don't want to lose them. If you're missing any of the early shows, I might look and see if I have it.
I'm missing about 50 shows.
You are? Okay, well, shoot me the list.
I got hacked very early on when I guess hacking first. I don't know if it first started, but I mean, definitely I was hacked and I ended up, my website crashed and I had to back up my data, lesson learned, and I actually lost right around 50 of my earliest programs. I've been for years. If anyone has those, please let me know.
Shoot me a list, and I'll see what I can find, because I can easily put my fingers on them. Getting back even further than the show, were you born a religious person? I mean, were you raised in a religious family, or were you born an atheist?
Good question. It was so weird. My parents divorced when I was very young, and so I lived primarily with my mom. And she never took me to church. She never taught her religion. If anything, I was the one always bringing it up. I was like, Mom, where are we? I remember one day she said, well, you know, we're Episcopalian Methodist, African, Methodist followers or whatever, or supposed to be or whatever, and members of that church. And I didn't know what the heck that was. I think I still messed up the name. And but I asked her, I said, well, but we never go to church. And she said, well, and that's literally how she said it. Well, she left it at that. So, and I remember a few times I began asking her questions about Easter and about Christmas, and it was always look it up.
Yeah.
And no matter what question I asked her, if she did not know, my mom would always say look it up. And she brought this extensive set of Encyclopedia Britannica.
Mm-hmm.
Many young folks listening probably have no idea what that is.
Yeah.
And that was my school. That was my school outside of school, and that is what began my journey to free thinking, even though I didn't really know it. And it was thanks to her not forcing religion down my throat. Whenever my friends invited me out to their masses, to churches, to their concerts, whatever, the Christmas plays, it didn't matter. My mom said, go. So she let me go. I would go to temples, I went to mosques, all at a very young age. And there was one commonality I noticed between all of them, is that none of them have evidence for their beliefs.
Right.
It is just a belief.
Yeah, take it on faith.
Yeah, exactly. It's all based on faith. And one of the very first philosophical concepts I realized was, well, wait a minute. If all of the religions are saying you just have to have faith, or it's based on faith, then that means there are no facts. So one can believe whatever they want to believe. Then how can they tell me that I must believe it then?
Right.
And it was at that point I began to start pulling away, but culture, you know, I joined the military, I'm a U.S. Army veteran, I joined the military, and I went to a chapel and everything and tried to go back and give myself to Christ and all those things.
Uh-huh.
But over time I just noticed the hypocrisy, the explanations weren't there, pastors could not adequately answer my questions, and I just slowly walked out of the door and never came back.
Really? So your loss of faith was over a long period of time. You didn't wake up one morning and say, there's no God.
It really was. And the primary reason for me really leaving was the fact that, again, there just wasn't any rational and adequate responses to my probing questions, such as, where did Adam and Eve come from?
Right.
If God created evil, as it says in Isaiah 45:7, then, who is really to blame? Does free will exist? The arguments. And then of course the problem of evil came about much later when I went to college. That was when I decided that I think I'm an atheist. I went to a Catholic school, and the dean had me take a few courses in philosophy. He just took a liking to me, and I couldn't figure out why. No, not like that.
Yeah.
But he took a liking to me, and he said, hey, there's this course coming up called Atheism, the Case Against God.
Wow.
Why don't you take it? And the textbook was George H. Smith's book,
Atheism, the Case Against God.
I highly recommend any of your listeners that are on the fence or questioning or wondering, why do atheists feel this way?
Mm-hmm.
Grab that book. It's a long read. You might even find it boring at first, but as you get into it, you'll start realizing that, wow, this guy has the courage to ask questions that I had deep inside too, but I was afraid I'd offend God.
Yeah, and he gave really good answers too to those questions. It's kind of a philosophically technical book, but if you want the answers to each one of the questions that religious people pose all the time, that is the go-to place. Riv had a question for you.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's nice to hear the podcast. I've listened to some of your stuff, and it's great. So it's nice to hear Sly, meet you. But so I guess I was just going to follow on to what you said about things following bit by bit. It's not just at one time, overnight, I guess I don't believe anymore. It's all the little things that once the mind begins to become curious. And I was going to ask, does it not seem strange, at least from your perspective, how before it seems as everything's fine, there's not a problem, but then, then once you go along and you start seeing all the holes, all of a sudden it's this new world opens up, and it's surprising how why is no one else upset about this? And it becomes a new view, and everyone else seems to be still kind of not taking the red pill yet. I just wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing. I think it was mentioned earlier, there's this compartmentalization. They have difficulty crossing the two different spectrums of reality. And, as I came, and it literally was very much like you described. It's almost like it was just opening up. This revelation is kind of almost like if you could visualize it. It was this flower, this bulb that was sealed, and all of a sudden it just opens up, and the whole world is, it now has access to this entire world. And you would think that that would be a beautiful thing. Like, why don't people want to investigate this and see what the world really looks like? Like, come out of the matrix. And I think there are a number of factors that would prevent people, I think, from seeing it that clearly. One is culture and tradition. Mm-hmm. There's also fear, fear of losing relationships with their loved ones.
Mm-hmm.
Fear of God as well. I mean, they don't really know what to make of it, but they still feel like something might have created this. What if they, upset that thing? And that's a lot to fear. So I think fear, because it's such a strong emotion in us, it can override our logical faculties mm-hmm. and make us, or some of us, regress or stay where we are and not just take that extra step forward. And what we do, instead of acknowledging our fears, we just make excuses for it, or we attack the messengers instead of saying, you know what, honestly, I'm just afraid. Because now we can have a conversation. If someone tells me, look, I'm afraid, I can say, okay, why are you afraid? Why are you afraid of an all-loving father? What is it? What's going on here? Yeah. See, now we can have our conversation. And so until they can get over that, they just keep the walls up.
Right. In conversations, I find with family, even now, it's very difficult to just have a dispassionate conversation about religion. It quickly divulges mm-hmm. into a personal association of you're attacking me and my God, and I have to keep on saying no. I'm not even saying that.
Well, it's driven by fear too. I mean, they don't want to be standing next to you when the lightning hits you.
Right, right.
But also for the fear for their eternal soul, they don't want to entertain doubts long enough to listen to you.
It's petrifying.
But also, what they've done is they've attached those beliefs to themselves personally.
Right.
I tell people it's no different than an object that you may own in your home, even though you didn't make it. If someone said, that's an ugly chair, okay, you're going to get ticked off. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, wait a minute, you invested all this money and time and effort mm-hmm. into that chair. You can't look at it objectively. You can't look at it from outside, you know, because it's a subjective experience mm-hmm. with a powerful emotional, magnetism to it.
Yeah.
And so I think people, they just jump automatically to defense. That's why I think it is so important for those of us who are involved in activism in any sense, whether it's political, religious, scientific, like climate change, we have to understand the emotional reasons why people respond the way they do. They don't even know that they're doing that.
Right.
So we have to make sure that we also know how, once we understand that, we can move in, we can kind of work with and move around the emotion somewhat, you know, acknowledging that it's there, caress it a little bit, and just talk to them and really listen to them. And I think we can get a lot more done than, as you see on the interwebs there, people are like, stupid, you're an idiot, you're dumb, blah, 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 blah. How come you believe this stuff? What's wrong with you? We're not going to get anywhere in any level of sophisticated discourse when we continue in that manner.
It's true. Speaking of that, do you do any debating yourself?
No, I have not. I kind of pulled away from that. Currently, right now, for the last 2 years, I've been a science educator, and once in the public school system and now in the private school system. And so I kind of made a promise to the people that have employed me that I will back away from that level of discourse. I'm really going to focus more on the science. That, for me, is the most important aspect. People need to become more scientifically literate. They need to accept the science and understand the science.
Yeah.
Accepting is good. Excuse me, is better, I should say, than understanding it, because as you know, one can understand all the scientific concepts but not accept it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's my goal to kind of move in that direction now, where I'm trying to get students and I'm trying to get adults to do both. So debating, probably not. The only two debates right now, if I were to be involved in a debate, would be about climate change and evolution. Those right now are two of my heavy topics that I think need to get more out there in the forefront.
Right. One of the things that the Christians generally don't understand is that they can believe the science and still be a believer. There are a lot of people who understand evolution, understand how it works, believe in it, you know, because they know it's real, but still are Christians. And half of the Christian group thinks, no, you can't do that. If you don't believe in, if you believe in evolution, you have to give up on God. You don't really have to. If you understand it, you can just say, book as an analogy and keep believing the way they want to. It's not that threatening.
Well, it depends, right? I mean, I think you're right. I think by and by and large, most Christians, if another Christian or the pastor would even hold their hand and talk to them about evolution in a rational, logical way, they would accept it without any problems. But it is those fundamentalist Christians who believe literally every single word of the book or their books, regardless of what they're the ones that cannot change their position. If a book says that, humans were made from a blood clot and mud, they're not going to change it. They're just not going to change their position. And I think, that they're afraid to, right? Because again, you're now discrediting, you're not having adequate faith or proper faith in the deity that you have pledged your you're guilty to. And so that becomes, I think, one of the major problems. And that is something difficult to get around until honest scholars and pastors and those types are more honest with their community, admitting that, you know what, we can't really take this literal. There are quite a number of figurative aspects to this and symbolic aspects, and this is what it really meant back then. Unfortunately, we're not having that honest discourse.
Yeah, I had a conversation with a good friend of mine, and here recently over the past weekend or so, and that kind of comes up because we're talking about contents in the Bible, for instance, and knows it really well. And what he was saying that it was all analogies and wasn't just Adam and Eve. It was actually a civilization, and four rivers meant four civilizations and everything interpret. So I kind of dug further. Now, he's a minister, he's a good guy, but I dug further and kept on telling him, so you have all these religions, yet you're certain that all of them are orally tradition, and they come back to the original, say, Gilgamesh, which is, from his perspective, just the Bible before people understood it. So I asked him, so that's from one religion, though. So what about from, you know, if you follow Krishna, or if you follow Allah, or so on and so on, Mithra, so on. And he said something very revealing to me, that he doesn't seem to see the problem. And then he said, when he set out looking at all the religions, and he tried to prove the Bible wrong, and he finally came to the point, well, if I'm going to accept the Bible, I need to try to ensure it's accurate.
Yeah,
and he doesn't even realize the problem. I tried to tell him that much, that, wait a minute, so you're just trying to interpret reality through the Bible rather than observing reality and seeing what it tells you. Mm-hmm. He doesn't seem to see the problem, and that's a gap to get over.
Right.
I mean, indeed, if you accept any position as true, then I think the honest thing to do would be to investigate that. You want to investigate the veracity of its claims. I don't think any rational person would do that. However, you cannot look to only biased sources, obviously, right? You have to look at sources that contradict and challenge what you think is true. I do that. When I look at climate change stuff, right, the first thing I do is, okay, who are the scientists that are saying it's not true? Let me read and see what they're saying. I go, okay, now let me see what the other guys are saying. So, interesting. Let me look at the ones that are in between and don't know. Interesting. All right, all the climate change deniers, they're full of crap. All right, and so that's just, I mean, but you have to look at all sides, and I can see why they perceive the way they do, and that with that, and because of that, you can have a discourse. I can, I understand your arguments about water vapor, and about, so I got it, but now I can address that and then move on into talking about why that isn't a viable explanation for the rise of global temperatures. So stuff like that. And so, and same thing as, you know, with evolution, right? Same thing. Once I understand the arguments against it, you know, I can better know how to address their arguments in a very sane and a non-emotional way as well. I think what happens is people get frustrated and disgusted by the responses, but once you understand where it's coming from, you're much better equipped to deal with them on a more personal and beneficial way.
Sure. We're at the bottom of the hour now. I'm going to take a short break, play a song. This will be the Atheist Christmas Carol. There's very few times I can actually play that. But since it's Christmas time, I figured I'd go ahead and play it. But be sure to stick around. Reg, I want to ask you about the wife swap show that you did a few years back, several now.
Wife shop sounds more interesting.
Wife shop. And be sure to stick with us. We'll be back in just a minute. Here we go.
Makes it a little easier on the...
It's
And that was The Atheist Christmas Carol by Vienna Tang. And welcome back to the show. This is the Free Thought Radio Hour, and I'm Doubter 5, and we have Rev with us.
Hello.
And we have the Infidel Guy. The call-in number is 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937 if you'd like to call in and join the conversation. Before we left, I mentioned that you were on a wife swap episode. Well, how did that work come about? And tell us a little bit about it, if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, many moons ago, and I don't talk about it much. They approached me. Back then, I was, I guess you consider, kind of one of the big guys on the block. I was getting quite a bit of notoriety, hundreds of thousands of listeners all over the, all, you know, globally. And they contacted me first, and they said, you know, how would you like to call this program? And it's called Wife Swap, and you're going to swap places. Well, your wife is going to swap families with another family, then that family's wife is going to come over here. And the kicker is, they're going to be a fundamentalist Christian family, and you're the atheist family. And I said, well, sounds interesting, but I don't know. I don't know if my family would buy it. You know, my wife wouldn't want to do that. I asked her. She was uncertain. So I polled my listeners. And I said, what do you guys think? Do you think this is a good opportunity for Free Thought and for atheism to get out there and just so we can show the face, so we show the world a face of a decent family who just happened to be atheist? Because, and that's what I wanted them to see. Not, I didn't want it to be a program about atheist family. I wanted it to be about a family that just happened to be atheist.
Sure.
Well, long story short, they completely tried to turn it into something that it wasn't. They created drama and conflict. They edited the footage to make it look like I said things I did not.
Yeah.
They actually copied and pasted segments. You could even see me change shirts and sweaters as they are cutting together what they want me to say. It was pretty sick. And so I regret doing that now, because I think that created a lot of friction among my fans who were thinking, you let us down. One scene, I broke down and cried because I realized what they were trying to do, and it just tore my heart to pieces that they were trying to make it look like I just didn't love my family. Wow. And I knew that that was not what I was giving them, but that's what they wanted. Wow. And I was also angry. I was so angry that I wanted to just cut them out, break their cameras, kick them out of the house.
Yeah.
But I knew that if I did that, that's exactly what they wanted.
Oh, yeah, that's good TV.
Right? So I've never been quite feeling that feeling of being trapped like that. And I think it just bubbled over. And I could not control myself, and I just started crying on the air. And it showed that I was human and that I did have weaknesses,
mm-hmm.
but others of the more in-your-face militant style of thinkers and atheists, they were upset. And I lost a lot of subscribers because of it. They said, you made us look bad, and that was bad.
Yeah. Well,
that show probably was the beginning of the end for the reason why I eventually ended up also just kind of getting out of the broadcast industry.
Well, I hope you'll come back. I hope you'll come roaring back when you get your PhD and you're ready to get into it again. But what's bad is that we often see this type of media portrayal of atheists. I can't tell how many times that we look at like CNN News or especially Fox. They just want to portray us in a negative light, and they'll go out of their way to do it.
And these are people.
Don't forget the microphone.
Oh, sorry. And the way you describe that, you know, I mean, I'm not even where you are, but my heart goes out to you there. I really, it hurts to hear that and feel that, you know, vicariously. And it's frustrating on another assault, because these are otherwise maybe decent people doing this to other people. And maybe not even thinking on the psychological aspect of it, what I'm doing is wrong. It doesn't even enter that. It's just broken down to a knee-jerk reaction of how can we frame this to convey what we think, and the rest of it is given out, and it's frustrating. But I don't know. I try to be hopeful about it, but.
I later discovered when I was there, one of the producers and I got somewhat close at one point, and we were emailing each other back and forth, but she had to keep telling me, shh, don't tell them I'm talking to you, though. And she was letting me know what was happening every night. She would tell me that, every night after filming, actually before, in the middle and after filming, she has to give constant updates. They have a storyboard that they're looking at, and they try their best to steer the segment in the direction of their pre-planned storyboard that they have set up. And if it doesn't go that way, then they have people who, it's her job, and the video editors and the managers and everybody else come up with a new plot and just keep the story going. And so that's what they were doing the whole time. I mean, there were segments when the wife would come to me to challenge me about things I didn't even say. You know, and I'm like, what are you talking about? And I would remind her, I said, you know that they're trying to make us fight, right? Let's show them that we're better than that as Christians and atheists, that we can work together, that we're civil, that we can still respect each other and have no problems. And but they just continue to try to push, both of our buttons. And it was very, very disappointing. Like, wow, you really don't want to see who we really are. You want something that is made for TV. And you want ratings, and you want commercial revenue. So that's what they were pushing.
Yeah.
Truth be damned.
Yeah. Even though you stopped making your audio podcasts, have you done any videos or any other, gotten into any other venues the last few years?
No, I have not. I experimented with some video when I was using Winamp streaming technologies right around 2002 or so, but I never went back. I am considering, though, maybe someone can give me one for Christmas, but getting a video camera and, like I said, getting set up here and starting a new podcast or a YouTube channel featuring again, science and philosophy, critical thinking, and a few other things, and just get back out there. Because it's obviously something I love to do. I love to teach. I love educating the public, and I love doing what I'm doing right now as an educator for a wonderful private school, teaching chemistry and marine biology right now. But at the same time, I love to affect large groups of people. I like being challenged too. I like people correcting me when I'm wrong and filling my head with new knowledge.
Yeah.
And so I'm not as challenged as I once was at the infidel time.
Yeah. If you've got a smartphone, you've got a studio right there in your hand. Have you ever experimented with like Periscope or Facebook Live or anything like that?
Yeah, I've seen people do Facebook Live. Even my wife has done it a few times. But my phone is crappy. I feel what you're doing. I need more memory. The camera's just not up to par. But you're right. I guess that is something I can look into. It'd be cheaper to probably upgrade my phone than to do anything else that's way sophisticated. But after the program, feel free to send me some stuff. I'd appreciate it.
Well, you have a place, I think, on your website to donate, don't you, I believe? Would you like to
mention
that?
Yeah, infidelguy.com. I do have a donate button there. That is what I'm working on. This is to help me through school. I recently finished, like I said, my master's in biology. It was Clemson University. And I had to pay my last two terms out of pocket. So that was brutal. And so now I'm starting my PhD program. And my focus, by the way, and I'm hoping my dissertation, is going to be about the effects of health information individuals on let me back up. It's really let me back up a couple of things. I'm writing a book right now about cancer cures that are promoted on the internet, cancer cures and treatments. And I've had a few people I know have succumbed to cancer because they were using alternative treatments or waited too long. And I saw that this was a big problem, that these are desperate people who don't have money. They are trying to, they just want to be healthy. And the web is rife with those who wish to take advantage of that. And so my master's thesis was an investigation into that. And as I began my research, I was really just looking at how prevalent it is out there, what kind of products are they peddling, is there any scientific evidence that backs up that they work. But I didn't really look in depth about the damage it causes. So now I want, for my PhD program, I really want to investigate in depth, not just nationally, but globally, the impact that the internet has on these same vulnerable people. And is it killing people? I mean, no, it is.
Yeah.
But no one's really keeping score. I'm scared to even imagine to see and to say what I'm going to discover as I conduct the research. I think it's going to be hundreds of thousands of people are probably dying every few years or so from just taking herbs and spices to treat their cancer, and it's
or worse.
It's pretty scary.
Look at Andy Kaufman.
I'll take a donation for that, probably.
Look at Andy Kaufman. I mean, he went all over the place looking at psychic surgery and different alternative medicine things, to try to cure him from his cancer, but he died anyway. And what really we should emphasize is the people who do this, who take advantage of vulnerable people in order to make a buck, are like below scum. We need to have laws that will protect us against these type of things. There's so many of our free speech laws and others protect them, and not only that, but a lot of these people are out of the country. Like Andy Kaufman, I think, went to India for his psychic surgery. They don't have any kind of laws like that there. But it's such a shame.
And all of these things have been debunked. As you know, James Randi has done an excellent job of exposing these fraudsters for a long time.
Yeah.
And yet it just comes back. It's almost like every few years it's forgotten about, like Peter Popoff.
Mm-hmm.
They just come back again, and it seems like, what is going on? So anyway, so that's what I am trying to do, is I'll pay my way through school. So if people do want to donate, I'm earning my PhD in health sciences, and I plan on, again, using that to focus and really start talking about these very issues, because they're very near and dear to my mind. And I think it's time legislation needs to be put in place in some way. I don't believe in stifling free speech per se, but I do think, though, that if someone makes a health claim by they better back it up. If they can't back it up, they need to be shut down, period.
Right. Exactly.
Well, and also, something that you mentioned about the claims being made, and everyone was mentioning free speech and the problems with making fraudulent claims and the technicalities and the laws and loopholes and so on. Something that came to mind, you know, the internet remembers, but people forget. And the internet is relatively new. Mm-hmm. So I think over time, it will have kind of a dual axe, or a dual blade, I guess. In one way, fake news is it's becoming more clever and cleverer with an agenda. But the other hand, accurate information is being more proliferated. They both are. It's enculturation, right? That's where it all starts. So if you can get people at the ground level and start bringing the facts and begin critical thinking.
Right, teaching them how to
differentiate. You'll have a lasting impact that way,
between
right?
Between real news and false news. Well, Reggie, you have interviewed so many people in the last, I don't know, 17 years. What interview sticks out in your mind that is most impressive to you?
Wow. You know what? I'm going to be honest. Wow. Impressive? That's...
It impressed you the most.
Tim Harris, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Shermer. Dr. Bob Price. Oh, Massimo Pigliucci.
Uh-huh.
Or should I say Pigliucci. Mm-hmm. Top of the list. Dr. Massimo Pigliucci, top of the list. He was always willing to appear on a program to talk about biological evolution. He's never told me no. He debated Ken Hogan on a radio program. So he's definitely at the top as far as academically, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Now, just some of the most memorable ones would be like the Son of Man, a guy who believed that he was the Son of Man that came back to Earth.
Oh, really?
that was crazy. Of course, David Duke, as I mentioned before. I've had a number of different programs. Wow, but those are the ones that stick out right away. If I were to think about it shortly, but give me more time, I could think about. Oh, I had an interview with a gentleman who talked about communism.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing. Buddhism. Again, that's why I tell people just search through the archives there at infidelguy.com. There's anything you're interested in is probably there. Transhumanism, cryogenics. There's a lot of things there.
Yeah. It's an education. Pigliucci, by the way, is from Knoxville. He was a member of the Rationalists of East Tennessee before he moved up to New York. Take a position up there. So he's one of our own here in Knoxville.
That's right. Yep.
If you had a message that you had to give out to people who hadn't heard any of your broadcasts, and you've got a kind of an ear of Knoxville now, what would you say to them? Especially for the people who are on the fence, that they don't know if they still believe or not, if they call themselves agnostics. Do you have any advice for those people?
Well, I mean, all I will say is that the reality is there are only a very few things that we can truly say that we do know for sure that are axiomatic. Other things we try our best to move as closely to the truth that we can. And I think some things are more plausible and more true than others. So I tell people the biggest thing is understanding your limitations of knowledge. The second thing is just being honest. And I think the third thing is just being curious. If you have all those things, one cannot help but inevitably leave religion and become a non-theist.
Yeah.
Because I truly think that honest inquiry and understanding of who and where you are, you know, intellectually, and it just makes all the difference. I think sometimes people lie to themselves. Agnostics, of course, it depends on the question. I consider myself an agnostic atheist, so it depends on the question.
Yeah, me too.
If someone says, oh, Reggie, is there a God? I would say, which one? I don't know any God. Beats me. I'm an agnostic atheist.
Yeah.
So if they say, do you think that there could be a consciousness that creates planets? I'm agnostic about that.
Yeah.
I mean, so, yeah. So
we're all talking about knowledge.
Labels are a big problem, but I think people should probably not worry about labels in so much and worry more so about how their particular beliefs may be affecting their communities, them personally, their families.
Mm-hmm.
Is it really benefiting people? Does your belief or lack thereof or your philosophy that you've replaced that belief with, is it full of understanding and love and really trying to make this world a better place, or is it filled with hate and prejudice and homophobia and bigotry and all these things? If that is the case, then, you know, you might need to change your philosophy or your religious
right.
outlook
yeah.
and find something
right.
more positive.
What I try to get across to people is examine your beliefs. I mean, most people don't take the time to look at their beliefs and say, this is what I actually believe and why. And not only that, but they should examine the costs of their beliefs, too.
Indeed.
I mean, sometimes it costs them their very family. Sometimes it costs them, the money that they give at 10% to the church. Look at the people who flew the planes into the Twin Towers. It cost them their lives. Look at... I can't remember her
right.
name, that lady who killed her 5 children so that they would all go to heaven when they were very young, because she understood from the teaching of the church that if they died before the age of like 12, then they would go to heaven. So she killed them all. The costs are hidden a lot of times, but you've got to look for those costs.
I get that asked all the time. You know, well, what do I have to lose? I mean, why not just believe? I said, well, you know that, and I had to remind one of my family members of this. I said, well, you can say that about anything. So the question is, why not just? The question is it valid enough? Is there enough evidence for me to waste my time participating in this?
Right.
And as you mentioned, and what are the costs of doing so? I reminded someone just a couple of weeks ago, actually. He asked me the same question. And I said, well, how much money do you spend every weekend? You know, mm-hmm. How much time away from your family do you spend doing things that are that you could be doing more fun and engaging things rather than listening to some person on a pulpit tell you things that you already know?
How much time do you spend studying your religion and studying the history of the Jewish people instead of the history of your own lineage? Religion tends to hijack the history of the person studying it.
On Black history, indeed. That is one thing I really, really have some major issues with. You see so much focus on the afterlife, and it's Judeo, you know, Christianity here, and I'm just so worried about many of my brothers and sisters out there mm-hmm. who you really, really think that humanity has only been here for a short amount of time, but theologically you just have all the answers. You just know that this is correct, and you don't surely understand this was forced on you. I mean, so our beliefs in Africa weren't good enough? Is that what you're saying? I thought you were, you know, some Afrocentric, you know, Black Power guy, but here you are going to church every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I've always found that to be very, very disturbing and just dishonest, or maybe it's just ignorance, or maybe it's a bit of both. I don't know.
Yeah. You were talking about how unfortunate it is that most people don't understand how little they know about science and evolution, that type of thing. There's a study, what was it, the Dunning-Kruger study?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where people have so little information or knowledge that they can't properly or adequately evaluate how little knowledge they have.
They don't know how much they don't know.
Right. And so they tend to think that they have more expertise than they do.
Yeah, and then conversely, those who are well educated take it for granted, not in a bad way, but they take it for granted. They know so much that it tends to become complacent, that to explain a theory, you just take it for granted that everyone understands 10 pages before
yeah.
that. And then
here's
the time I committed to mail growing up. The Bible is all I need. I mean, you hear this all the time. I'm like, so I hate to say this, but I mean, I know that it could be because, of course, there are a lot of religious people in poor communities, but it's a horrible feedback loop, I think, you kind of get involved in, where people think that, well, all they need is the Bible, then that's all they need, and I think expectations, maybe, or I should say, maybe religion in some ways may kill curiosity for things that are not religious.
Hmm.
And I think I've seen this over and over again in my community, and it's pretty sad. And you mentioned the Dunning-Kruger effect. I can't help but, and I don't want to turn your listeners off who supported Donald Trump, but it just reminds me of this, of Donald Trump. And you're talking about someone who definitively who suffers from this type of superiority complex, constantly misassessing his knowledge, or he trumps up, no pun intended, his own knowledge, and anyone can see that he doesn't have the knowledge, or you would think anyone could see. He doesn't really, he boasts far too much. He cannot have the knowledge that he has, and yet it was convincing enough for newer people to vote for him in some way. Let's just say all of them voted for him because of that, but many did, just because of his grandstanding.
Right. By the way, I looked up that lady online while you were talking, and the woman who killed her five children just in order to send them to heaven because they were small is Andrea Yates. So if the listener wants to look that up, they can do that.
Well, we're I mean, I believe Tom Lakin talked about it on his radio show. You think all of them are named after biblical characters.
Right.
All of her children had biblical names, you know, and not to say religion drove her crazy to do that, but definitely what religion could do is you could potentially make you bypass the warning sign that there's something wrong with this, about having this many children without a plan.
Right. Well, and, plus the people at her church, you know, are feeding into it, and all the people that she knows and who also are Christian are feeding into it, whether they're feeding into it a little bit or a lot. You know, she's living in a society that supports this type of thinking.
Yeah, there's a quote that goes, poorly paraphrasing it, good people, there will be people who do good things, and there will be people who do bad things, but religion can make good people do bad things.
Right. Yeah. That's so true. Well, we're just about out of time. Any thoughts you'd like to leave us with before we say to you?
Well, yeah, sure. Anybody out there, if you want to communicate with me professionally for any communicating or debates or talks, I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can also visit my personal page at ReginaldFinley.com. That is my full name, Reginald Finley. I've also started another website called AmazingLife.bio, but all that can be found at ReginaldFinley.com. All the websites I'm involved in and my current education exploits and even a few of my research articles I've written about GMOs as well as evolution is available. So feel free to visit ReginaldFinley.com and that's my portal to everything. That is me.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Reginald. I appreciate you coming on the show and letting us interview you. I wish you all the best and take good care in those studies, and hopefully you'll come back stronger and better doing podcasts
or
getting involved in the theist-atheist communications or conversations.
Sure thing.
Yeah,
well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Sure thing. I will come back anytime. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Infidel Guy. And we're going to close out with Save the Enlightenment and Why Don't Bees Go to Heaven. But Rue, do you have any parting shots?
I'm just going to say that, it's a French quote, goes back some 50 or 70 years, but to paraphrase it, follow those who seek the truth and doubt those who claim they know it.
There you go. And I usually sign off with, even if you're a Christian, you're not safe. Everybody's going to somebody else's version of hell. And why don't bees go to heaven? By Save the Enlightenment. We'll take us to the top of the hour. This is WOZO 103.9 LPFM live in Knoxville, Tennessee.
It seems to me the species Homo sapiens carries the chutzpah gene. To think they are the purpose of the universe when they only just arrived on the scene. What's even worse, they bear a curse of believing they're the only form of life to never die and go on living somewhere high up in the sky.
Somewhere high up in the sky.
So why don't bees go to heaven and trees go to heaven? Amoeba, krill and fleas go to heaven. It's not surprising that they're not arising, 'cause man created